Palliative sedation is not a panacea. That's according to an article in the June 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. Dr. Alexander Kahn is with the Naval Medical Center in San Diego, and he joins us now from the Sunshine State. Dr. Kahn, in your article, you address an assumption that palliative sedation can eliminate suffering, and you state that there are limitations to palliative sedation. Could you explain that, please?
Well, there's a lot of data now that shows that that people who are sedated or even under general anesthesia actually continue to experience awareness and can continue to experience pain and other forms of suffering as well, even when providers believe that those people are under moderate or deep sedation or even under general anesthesia. So that leads us to believe that that there are a non-trivial number of patients undergoing palliative sedation who actually continue to suffer, and we're not seeing that on the outside.
Now, it's understanding, and what you're trying to get across was understanding the limitations of palliative sedation and that there are different levels of palliative sedation, minimal, moderate, and deep, and most of the time people are all within that moderate category, correct?
Right. So actually, levels of sedation are defined by the anesthesiologists, and there's very clear definitions for those. And so anesthesia defines minimal, moderate, and deep sedation. So that's not, it's not a conceptual area that's up for debate. It's clearly defined, and the defining difference between moderate sedation and deep sedation is that in moderate sedation, people maintain adequate ventilation and maintain the ability to protect their airway. And in deep sedation, patients often maintain adequate ventilation and their airway. However, there is a real possibility that people will hypoventilate and will lose the ability to maintain their airway, which is why deep sedation is something that hospitals allow providers to do only if they have advanced airway management skills and are under proper monitoring settings. And so when patients are undergoing palliative sedation, they're generally not in an ICU. They're generally not on a ventilator. They're generally not continuously attended by a credentialed provider. And so to those patients, per most hospitals' policies, have to be under moderate sedation, not deep sedation. And if individuals are using deep sedation, not following hospital guidelines for appropriate monitoring and appropriate attending presence, then that raises issues about whether their palliative sedation protocols are within their hospital policy.
One of the items you bring up article about is about various studies that demonstrate that physicians' clinical judgment regarding the adequacy of sedation in eliminating suffering in individual patients is highly unreliable. Why is that?
Well, part of that is the difference between what people experience and what people express. So what traditionally we believed was that if someone appeared to be fully anesthetized or deeply sedated, that that in fact their cognitive function was depressed sufficiently so that they were actually unaware and unconscious. And what it turns out is that that's simply not the case, that we can actually produce a state in many patients where their external appearance is that they're fully anesthetized or deeply sedated. But in fact, they have neurological function significantly greater than that. And so they are actually able to experience pain and suffering and nausea and many of these other very unpleasant symptoms, but they're not able to express that, or they don't appear externally to be suffering. And so there's this disconnect, which perhaps isn't surprising because, of course, those are different areas of the brain. One area of the brain is the area experiencing those suffering symptoms, and a different part of the brain is what produces external signs. And so it's certainly plausible that in some patients, and this is what we see in the research, certainly not in many, many patients, but in a significant minority of patients, that those areas of the brain, the expressive area is deeply depressed, but the sensory area and cognitive areas are not as deeply depressed. And so that's what seems to produce these states in a few patients where their external signs are that they're fully anesthetized or deeply sedated, but their own experience is different.
Does this assumption about palliative sedation and that it can eliminate pain and suffering, does that linger because there remains some hesitation around physician-assisted dying?
So I think that there's a couple of points. There's no question that if people are nervous about providing adequate levels of analgesia and sedation medications, they're certainly more likely to have these kinds of problems, whether they're not producing adequate sedation or analgesia. There's no question about it. And there are certainly times where physicians and other healthcare providers are nervous because they're nervous about lawsuits or potentially hastening death, and so they're providing inadequate doses of medications. That is certainly a problem that needs to be dealt with, so that when we're doing palliative sedation, we can do it to the best ability that we can. But even when providers aren't tailoring therapy because they're worried about hastening death or aren't worried about physician-assisted dying, even if one is providing optimal palliative sedation, the data suggests that still some of those patients are going to be experiencing ongoing suffering and ongoing pain. And certainly the sort of the maximal level of sedation that we can provide is general anesthesia. And we provide general anesthesia all the time at hospitals throughout the world. And what we believe is if someone is under general anesthesia, that they're not experiencing any pain or any suffering. And what we have found time and time again through empirical research is that that's simply not true, that there is a very small number of patients that actually is experiencing pain, is experiencing suffering, and even to the point where they can be under general anesthesia and can recall conversations that are happening in the OR, and that's very troubling. So it seems as though regardless of what we do, regardless of how aggressive we are in providing sedation, there will be some patients for whom we're unable to bring them down to a level to completely eliminate their cognitive states and their suffering, and we don't realize it. We think we're bringing them down to that level, but we're not.
Then you suggest some criteria for a decision to be made around physician-assisted death. Talk about that criteria that you suggest.
So what Dr. Ablin and I have talked about in the past, and I will say Dr. Ablin and I, in our previous publications, are really only talking about allowing death to occur naturally, and I certainly don't want to say that he is using these arguments in favor of physician-assisted dying. However, from my perspective, what we have argued in the past, I think what follows very closely with physician-assisted dying. And what we've talked about is that in some cases, the patient and the provider agree that the most appropriate primary goal of treatment is the relief of suffering. And that oftentimes goes hand in hand with lifelong interventions. Sometimes the sole goal of treatment is to eliminate suffering. And in some of those cases, the patient is suffering unbearably. And there are many different ways that people have tried to define unbearable suffering. we've used a very clinical approach, which is simply suffering is unbearable if the person who's experiencing that suffering says that they can't bear to live with this amount of suffering. And so if the only choice is between death and this level of ongoing suffering, that that person believes that death is preferable, then we would define that as unbearable suffering because they can't bear to live that way. So if those first two criteria are met and optimal palliative treatment has already been employed, and through optimal palliative treatment, we've been unable to bring the suffering down to a level that the patient believes is bearable, then we're in a situation where if the patient and provider believe that the only option to bring the suffering down to a level that's bearable is death, then death can be seen as therapeutic. Because if the primary goal of treatment is to eliminate suffering, and the only way to eliminate suffering is to hasten the patient's death, then one could argue, as I would, that hastening the patient's death is actually a therapeutic intervention.
You conclude your article with a statement, and I'm paraphrasing here, that those who oppose physician-assisted dying are arguing that, all things considered, it is better to condemn some patients to living with unbearable suffering rather than allow physician-assisted dying. That's a rather stark choice, isn't it?
Well, I think it is a stark choice, but I think that's the reality. And I think that there are good reasons to argue both sides. There are many people, for example, the AMA has said that in principle, AMA is not opposed to physician-assisted dying, but that all things considered, there are significant social risks to allowing physician-assisted dying. Therefore, all things considered, the AMA doesn't support it. And I think that that's very telling, and I think many would say very wise, because there are certainly significant social ramifications to allowing physician-assisted dying. Now, I will say my personal belief is that if one weighs the pros and cons of both sides, I would argue that actually allowing physician-assisted dying is appropriate, but there certainly would need to be very many checks and balances put in place. For example, in the Oregon system, which has a very robust way of looking at this issue and ensuring that patients are receiving excellent care and excellent treatment, that's clearly very important. But I think that there are many people who, even given those kinds of situations, those kinds of safeguards, would say it's still better to not allow physician-assisted dying. But I think that we have to then realize that what we're doing is we're condemning some people to a life of unbearable suffering. And some people may say that all things considered, that's better. I think many people would say that all things considered, it's not better. And I think that we need to really be debating that point vigorously. But saying that, well, as long as we have legislation, it really obviates the need for physician-assisted dying. It's simply adding up its blind to that.
The article is entitled Palliative Sedation, It's Not a Panacea. It's in the June 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.